Welcome to Clinical Pearls. I'm Tracy White. I'm here with my co-host, BJ Homankuli. Hey, BJ.
What's up, Tracy?
Well, I was thinking that being pregnant and having a baby must be very anxiety-provoking, or can be, maybe not all the time. But I think even in situations where you have all of the resources that you could want, It could still be very stressful. So what if you didn't even have those resources or didn't know how to access them, or perhaps just felt really alone in the whole process? I mean, I think that would be really tough to deal with.
Oh, no, I think it definitely would be tough to deal with, not just for the pregnant woman, but definitely even for the family.
Mm-hmm.
And we are super excited on today's episode. We have Candace Knight and Carmi Johnson with the Family Nurse Partnership Program here at UAB School of Nursing. That will we will learn and hear about what they do in terms of helping women who are pregnant and their babies navigate that whole process. So we're definitely excited on today's Clinical Pearls.
Remember to like and share on whatever platform you're listening to your podcasts. The Nurse Family Partnership works by having specially trained nurses regularly visit moms-to-be, starting early in the pregnancy and continuing after the baby is born. The goals of this program include improving pregnancy outcomes by helping women engage in good preventative health practices, improving child health and development by helping parents provide responsible and competent care, and improving the economic self-sufficiency of the family by helping parents develop a vision for their own future, plan future pregnancies, continue their education, and find work. Today, we are so excited to have Dr. Carmi Johnson and Dr. Candace Knight joining us to talk about this amazing project. Dr. Knight teaches obstetric nursing in the undergraduate and accelerated master's programs. Her qualitative doctoral research focused on adolescent prenatal stress, and she continues her research activities as part of a team exploring adolescent sexual decision making. Dr. Johnson is an assistant professor who specializes in mental health nursing with an emphasis on the child-adolescent population. She has extensive experience in cultural competency as a Peace Corps volunteer and is the Paul D. Coverdale Peace Corps Fellows Coordinator for the UAB School of Nursing. Her expertise in these two fields is combined in her interest in international forensic nursing. Thank you both for being here. This is very exciting. Get to sit and talk with you.
You guys are very well accomplished. Thank you for coming.
Yeah, there's more to them than that short bio that I did. So I would love for each of you to tell us a little bit more about your background in nursing, kind of what brought you here and led you to the Nurse Family Partnership. So we'll start with you, Candace.
Yeah, thanks for having us. I'm growing up, didn't want to be a nurse. My mother was a nurse, and I saw that and just thought, oh, I can't do that. And then as I was in my undergraduate degree, I actually got a job working as a nursing assistant for a young man who was quadriplegic, and really saw the value of helping others and how that impacted me. And so that's really what led me to nursing. I always wanted to work with kids, and so started to pursue a job in pediatrics. And as I graduated, it actually is so strange to say now, there was kind of a glut of nurses in the workforce. Mm-hmm. And so you really couldn't be very picky about where you ended up. And so I landed, thankfully, in labor and delivery at Brookwood and really enjoyed that work. And so again, with my love of teaching, almost immediately started teaching childbirth classes, and so just kind of fell into this line of nursing, maternal child health, and have just loved it ever since.
Awesome. Yeah. That's great. I think similarly, the child of a nurse. So nursing was not on my radar per se. Went to UAB for undergrad and got a degree in biology because I was pre-med, and ended up also getting one in art studio because, I like to spend a lot of time in college.
And it makes sense now.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Makes sense now.
And so at the time that I graduated, I was pre-med. I was Miss UAB. So I thought, well, yeah, UAB has to let Miss UAB into their med school. Fun fact, they do not. And so just didn't know what to do next, was really kind of, soul searching, and saw a sign that said Peace Corps Information Meeting on University Avenue, Wednesday at 7 o'clock. It was Wednesday at 6:55. So I pulled my car in and went to that information meeting and just snowballed into joining the Peace Corps, which sent me to Samoa in the South Pacific, where I taught science. And that's where I kind of just, and taught science, religious education, computers, because I was one who knew how to turn one on. And so, but that led me to really think, I like teaching. I really do. And really thought I'd like to teach probably at the university level because of classroom management. And so then thought, what could I do? Someone suggested they have accelerated nursing programs where you can get your degree in a year. And I thought, well, that'll be good. I can always have a job and then probably segue into teaching. And so did that, came back to Birmingham, and just kind of took my first job. And I always say, I was like, yeah, I kind of went about things backwards. Most people go into, most of our faculty are people who were just great nurses. And then because they were good nurses, people were like, you should teach nursing. And I was someone who thought, oh, I'm pretty good at teaching. What can I teach?
Ah, yes.
Yeah. And so that's what I did. But I always say, the third week in nursing school, I remember having this realization of, I love this. This awesome. Is great. You know, my biology degree was all about the Krebs cycle and APT, but not really how it affected people.
Yes. What a connection.
Yeah. And I was like, this is awesome. And so then I thought I would only be at the bedside for about 5 years and just fell in love with being a bedside nurse and started ER, went to psych eventually, and then adolescent psych, and became a psych nurse practitioner. And was, we have a lot of, and I'm in one now, you know, nurse-led clinics or nurse-led partnerships that are practice-based, and was recruited to do that and simultaneously recruited to become faculty and teach.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Great. You are awesome.
You know, I just like hearing the different pathways that all of our guests took into becoming nurses and then eventually becoming nurse educators. Mm-hmm. So it's wonderful, even for our listeners out there who have interest in becoming nurses or educators, there's different pathways. So, you know, we're talking about the nurse family partnership. Is it okay if we just call it NFP?
Please.
Yeah, because we love our
It's a mouthful.
It's a mouthful. So how does the UAB NFP partnership contribute to improving maternal and child health outcomes in the community? First of all, can you just define what the NFP is?
So Nurse Family Partnership is a national model of evidence-based practice that started almost 50 years ago with some research by Dr. David Olds out in in Memphis, Tennessee, and Elmira, New York. And what he found was that when you partner a nurse, particularly a BSN prepared nurse, with a family that is at risk for poor maternal child outcomes because of, socio-demographic kinds of things, mm-hmm. and also comorbidities, that the family, not just mom and not just baby, but the family actually has better outcomes. Those babies were followed longitudinally, and they found that they were less likely to be involved in the criminal justice system. They were better prepared for entry into school. And early on, the outcomes weren't as significant with mom as far as pregnancy outcomes and labor and delivery outcomes. But as they have continued to track this model over the years, they found that it was really impactful for moms. And we found that here, mm-hmm. particularly in Jefferson County as well. So the nurses that go out, they go out and they start seeing moms in pregnancy, and they sit with them in their homes. They visit with them in their homes or in their community. So sometimes moms aren't really comfortable with the nurses actually coming into their homes. And so they might visit with them at McDonald's or the library or Chick-fil-A or, you know, just wherever.
Parks.
Yeah. Sometimes it's just, you know, it's a park. But they start visiting with them during pregnancy, and they do, you know, the typical nurse thing. You know, they do vitals, they weigh them, they kind of check and talk to them about their review of systems, how are things going. But then they do a lot more. I find that it's kind of a blend of nursing and social work. And so they're doing all kinds of assessments with, you know, mental health, just kind of the family system, you know, the community, the home, those kinds of things. And really from that, they connect with community resources. You know, they also connect with a provider if they find things in the home, you know, in mom's, you know, vital signs or something that, you know, or the baby's weight, then they're going to connect with that provider and let them know, hey, this is what's going on. How can I help you work with this? How can I follow this and assess this further? So it's a really robust and just intense intervention for these families, and it lasts for 2.5 years. Oh. So we follow them from pregnancy through baby's second birthday. So by the end of the program, when these moms graduate, the nurses and really a lot of us that follow along feel like family.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I can imagine.
Yeah. So it's a great intervention, and it has been really effective and impactful for our moms and families.
At what point do you pair the nurse with the mom to be? Does it matter where in the pregnancy she is, or?
So the eligibility criteria for the program, for the national program, is that for the pure form of NFP is that we serve first time mothers.
Okay.
So those moms have to come into the program before the end of their 28th week of gestation.
Okay.
Now we actually were part of a pilot program with NFP, which we see multiple women. So those are women who've had other babies before. And so we can enroll them up to the day of delivery, and it doesn't matter how many babies that they've had. So outside of Jefferson County, that's the model that we employ. So we can, as long as they haven't had a baby yet and they're still pregnant, they qualify.
I think it's great that you can see women who've had other children, because I imagine if they've gone through it once, they want that again. Can you give me a nurse, please? Yeah. This is gonna. Yeah. It was so helpful the first time. Yeah. So
Carmi, what is your role in this program as a psych mental health nurse?
So as Dr. Knight was explaining, you know, what the model looks like, I was also thinking, I was like, that is one of the great things too about being at really innovative academic practice site like the School of Nursing. Mm-hmm. You're able to pull in someone like me. Exactly. To be completely frank, a psych nurse practitioner is expensive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they are. And so we, because we're through this NFP, is through an academic institution, utilizing grant funds, utilizing other community stakeholders, and knowing how to secure those funds and to secure that support, you're able to utilize me as a psych nurse practitioner. And so one of the things, and I actually first came on not really in that role, more as a psych nurse, mm-hmm. and really looking at doing therapies and sort of systems analysis and looking at, you know, we joke in within the Nurse Family Partnership that like, oh, Carmi knows nothing about babies or pregnancy.
I wondered that.
Yes.
I didn't think that was your background.
Oh, I've learned. There. Yeah. We have many anecdotes where I've made recommendations that the nurses have been like, no, you can't leave a baby in the bassinet in a car seat for 3 hours because it's crying. I was like, oh, sorry. Or I did not actually say that, but I thought, well, why can't you? And then I quickly found out, no, you're not supposed to do that. I did have the wherewithal not to say that to the client. But I came on board because Dr. Knight and I had worked together academically, and she knew my background working with adolescents and knew kind of how much I liked that population. And how I came on board is the idea of, I've learned to say now that I'm like, oh no, I'm a women's health nurse. Why? Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, because what we want, what we've seen, all the research that comes out is healthy adults come from being healthy kids who come from being raised by healthy mothers.
Mm-hmm.
Fathers are hugely important. Other factors are hugely important. I'm not to downplay that. But if we had to select kind of the largest piece of the pie that leads towards stability, and that would be health stability, mental stability, financial stability, it really is the mother's stability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true. Well, I'm gonna interrupt you and just kind of connect the dots, because in the first year of the program, we saw that this population of women that we serve had a really higher than what I perceived to be a normal rate of mental health needs. Yes. So in the general population, the statistics are kind of iffy when you can find them, but it's generally known that about 20% of the population has a mental health diagnosis or needs for services. What we were seeing was closer to 30% in our population. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think we had one client in particular that I think she was one of Charlotte's that was just so depressed that no matter how many resources we brought to her, she just was not activated enough to be able to take hold of those resources and actually get the care that she needed. And so I think, you know, I took that situation to Carmi and I was like, we need, these nurses are wonderful. They're able to connect mm-hmm. with resources. They're great. But this particular patient, and there are so many like her, needs something else. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that's when we were able to connect with the Jefferson County Department of Health for the funding to bring Carmi on and really saw pretty immediately that, you know, Carmi being able to diagnose and recommend treatment for these moms was hugely beneficial because really, that was 5-6 years
yeah.
ago?
Yeah.
At that time, you know, there were a lot of obstetricians who really were very uncomfortable diagnosing and treating depression and anxiety in pregnancy and even after. And so that was one of the things that Carmi was really helpful with is really just kind of sometimes holding the hand of another provider and saying, these things are okay and it's normal. So I'm going to let you.
You speak to, we've made great inroads in communities. We talk about all the time. When I first started, there were OBs in different counties whose names that are now familiar to me that were so reluctant to prescribe mm-hmm. and working with them. But also the biggest thing that I think is really a lasting thing was giving our mothers the language to advocate for themselves, right? So things like, I talked with this person, they said sertraline would be okay for blah, 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 and that I could just start at this milligram and that there wasn't any problems with it. And they gave me their number. So Dr. So-and-so, if you have any difficulty, please reach out to Carmi Johnson. She's a psych nurse practitioner. She's happy to talk with you about these things. What I noticed over time was no OBs called me, but every single one of them started prescribing. And now I have OBs that like, now I'm like, they proactively give it to clients. Yeah. They've made like a practice change, which I think is really just great. But it also really for our moms, I think that was a really neat thing is seeing that. So within the prescribing, being able to walk not just our moms, other providers, our nurses through, looking at their treatment options with somebody else has been one of the lasting changes that we've made in our communities.
You said something about giving our moms the language that mm-hmm. they need to be able to communicate mm-hmm. to providers. You know, one story always sticks out to me, and that's, you know, we had a client with who was having thoughts of harming herself, mm-hmm. and she expressed this to the nurse, and the nurse, you know, followed our procedure, and we're creating a safety plan and ask her to then call her provider, you know, to get treatment, get medication, to see, you know, what the next steps were for her. And when she called the provider, she left a message that said, this woman was postpartum, and she said something like, you know, I'm just not feeling like myself, which, you know, is most of us probably know, you leave a message like that, you're going to get a call back in, 2 days.
Right.
And, you know, and that's kind of what was going on. And her nurse was able to coach her and say, okay, that doesn't get the response that this situation mm-hmm. desires. And so she said, okay, I want you to call back and I want you to tell them I'm having thoughts of harming myself. And of course she did, and immediately got a phone call back from the provider, mm-hmm. which was what, you know, what needed to happen. Yeah. And so mm-hmm. it's, you know, that's the value of not only having Carmi on our team, but also these nurses really working with women and advocating for them, but teaching them that the language to use to get the attention of a provider.
Right.
Yeah. You know, we see that in mental health. Yeah. We see that in other, hypertension, you know, we see that in a lot of ways with this population. And I think it's, you know, just it's health literacy. You know, we talk a lot about, you know, people sometimes don't know the things to say, and it's why it's great to have a nurse in the family. And so that's really kind of what this program provides, is you now have a nurse in the family if you didn't before.
For 2 years.
Yeah, for two and a half years. And so I think that's one of the really great benefits.
I think so. I think it speaks to kind of one of the things is that white coat phenomena when you're in front of somebody who you feel, and a lot of our clients have this, they have had, you know, different degrees of relationships with quote unquote authority figures. And so they either don't know how to, you know, or they're just like, no, but this person is smarter than me or makes more money than me and they're is more well put together than me. So they must know what's going on with me. And we tell them, do you know who knows what's going on with you best? You. You. So don't be afraid to tell that provider everything that needs to happen or what you want to have happen. And we've seen, tremendous change within that. We've also seen, for me, I think that not just with providers, but with moms, one of the sort of success stories that has occurred over time is other diagnoses that people don't think about. Everyone thinks about postpartum depression. People don't think about postpartum anxiety, right? Like this idea of the example I've always used is, if I had somebody that was waking up every hour to check their stove and count to 17 that it was off and then go back to sleep and wake up again, you would say they're anxious and have OCD and we need to do some interventions. But if a mom is waking up every hour and counting her baby's breath to 17 before she can go to sleep again, you think that's normal. And I'm just like, that's, no one needs to sit in anxiety for 6 months. That's a terrible outcome for her and for the baby. We know about the bonding that occurs with
husband.
That. Yeah, the husband. the entirety of the family, because he's like, I don't understand what's going, isn't this normal? And, you know, so I think that that was other things that we've been able to really advocate for, to look at, to examine closely. Again, give our moms the language of, there's a difference between stress and distress.
Right.
And you're in distress about these things. And you don't just have to do this alone. You have, we have wonderful nurse home visitors. My job is exponentially easier because they exist. There's these, we do have wonderful facilitators within the NFP. But the thing that I always think is, we talked about it over the years, the nurse has made this great relationship with the client. I come in, I sit down, and then they will tell me a lot of things. And the nurse home visitor is like, they never told me that, Carmi, they, you know, or these things, they really unloaded on you. And I was like, oh, but that's because number one, they trust you. And if you trust me, then they're going to trust me.
Ah, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way
before. Yeah. It's in there. And I was like, and the relationship is such that they know what I'm coming in for. They kind of, you know, and you've phrased it like, this is someone that specializes in mental health and coping. So please share everything and no one will judge you and they won't judge you. And so then immediately it's like all these things. And then the nurse is like, and I'm like, it's really, it's not me. It's reflective of the relationship that you laid down with that client.
You know, I like that, you know, in all the things that you guys do, you're empowering the women who later empower the rest of the family, you know? So that's wonderful. And something that I think you guys are doing, that you started doing a long time ago, is this whole concept of assessing for social determinants of health. I think you guys were in the forefront with all of that. And we are teaching our graduate students now, you know, to be on the lookout for some of those social determinants of health. So kudos for you guys for recognizing that a long time ago.
Yeah, I think that's one of the many valuable things that this model benefits our school, just because, you know, our students get to go through and do a shadow visit and they see, when you see live and in person what someone's life is like and why they might have barriers to care, you know, barriers to accessing care, barriers to getting that prescription, barriers to, you know, you as a provider, when you go and tell somebody, okay, you need to walk every day, mm-hmm. or you need to, you know, just 10 minutes a day, just go for a walk. When you see their environment and see that they don't live in a place that's safe for them to right. walk for 10 minutes, it changes the way you practice. It changes the advice that you give. It changes your treatment protocols. Mm-hmm. And it also changes the way that you communicate with people. When you've seen, you know, that there might be people out there that live in a different way that you do, that don't have the means that you do. And so I think it's really important for all healthcare providers mm-hmm. to really see what life is like in different cultures, in different, you know, the way different people live, because, you know, it's definitely not, you know, one size fits all with, sure. with treatment. Yeah. So I think it's super valuable. I love having students who have that light bulb moment, right. who realize that, you know, I might have had a bias about this particular thing. You know, I say all the time that, you know, I had biases when I started this work. And, you know, one of mine was that if you want a job, you can have a job. And I have seen very clearly mm-hmm. that's not true.
That's true.
In all situations. So,
So I want to go back to something you talked about a second ago, Carmi, the trust and how they trust the nurse that's been coming, that's partnered with them. How is it that they build that trust? I mean, I can imagine going in, it's probably a little scary for both the client and the nurse who's coming in. Discuss a little bit that process of how they establish that trust and how do you set it up for success?
You know, I'll let Candace kind of feel that. She knows more about that initial stages
yeah,
of
sure.
that kind of, you know, forming that partnership. So if you'd like to kind of speak to that, like, what is the process? And I can interject on certain things.
Yeah. You know, when we first started this, honestly, I did not know that women would be so open to have nurses in their home. And we've actually found kind of some differences, cultural differences from our urban to our rural populations. Mm-hmm. And it seems like our urban moms are typically more open to having people come into their home, whereas our rural moms, just as a general rule, you know, it's terrible to make generalizations, but are a little more distrustful. And so we meet them where they are. Mm-hmm. If they're open with us coming into their home, we're happy to do that. You know, it doesn't matter what the house looks like. And we tell them that, you know, the house doesn't have to be clean. I think I would feel that way. I'd be like, oh no, I can't have you in my house. It's not neat as a pin and it's, you know, not all tidy. But you know, we tell them that, you know, we've been into homes where, you know, they've just moved in and there's no furniture and we, you know, we're happy as a clam to sit on the floor and, you know, and talk for an hour. And so I think, you know, how our nurses engage with these clients and truly the people that these nurses are. They love this population. They feel like we all feel like it's a privilege to do this work. And I think that comes across sure. and that pretty quickly builds that trust when moms see that we're not coming in here to, you know, to judge you, to tell you what you're doing wrong, to, you know, those kinds of things. We're here to come alongside and support. You know, and really be interested in your life beyond just what your blood pressure is and, you know, and how much you weigh today. It's really about, you know, tell me what's going on with your family. You know, I'm interested to see what happened since the last time that we met. So it's really building a relationship. Mm. I think that's the magic.
And I think it is. And I think it's funny because we both teach primarily in pre-licensure. So those are your nursing skills.
Yeah.
And you asked, how's that happen? I go, it's a nursing skill. They're nurses.
Yep.
You know, I love that my undergrad or my pre-licensure students are very excited to do things like start an IV.
Yeah.
And I tell them, because I teach mental health, I'm like, do you know what separates nurses from every other healthcare profession? And they all bring something wonderful to the table. I go, nobody establishes rapport and a therapeutic relationship better and quicker than nurses. And that is a mm-hmm. skill. Mm-hmm. That is a skill you will need to work on. It is what, when people say, you know, oh, it's the most trusted profession. I go, it's not because you can start an IV.
Right.
It's because you can establish that relationship pretty quickly through warmth, through empathy, through accountability.
Yeah.
Do you know that I think that all those things, and those don't, I'll be honest, they don't come overly natural to like, but you learn them. And our nurses, I think it does come natural to them, but I absolutely think they have really enhanced their skill set. Mm-hmm. So, and I joke about myself too. I'm like, you make very conscious choices too, that you do within that nursing framework of, when I go into the home, I'm usually pretty dressed loosely. You know, I don't want to come. You know, you make certain choices about like, yeah, we're very casual. I change my language, all those things to reflect back. A lot of my clients, the first client I ever had, quote unquote, fired me.
Oh.
Because she had and we see this a lot. We see a lot of our clients, and I think a lot of people, have a background of trauma that is undisclosed.
Yeah.
And she had a background of trauma that had been required that she go through sort of mental health treatment. But as she said, I don't think they cared about me. It was just checking off the box.
Oh.
And she was very, very wary of, and she kept asking me, you sound like a psychiatrist. Are you sure you're not one? I'm like, promise you, I'm a nurse. Yeah. This is, you know, I'm like, I'm a psych nurse, but I'm a nurse. But that was very overwhelming to her, that process. So a lot of what we do too is correct those things, mm-hmm. correct the idea of mental health looks like this. It looks like Sigmund Freud taking notes and you laying on a couch.
Yeah.
I go, mental health looks like somebody that wants to hear your story, wants to root for you, mm-hmm. understands good boundaries, that I am not going to do these things for you, but here's the resources and I believe you can do them. And if you can't, we'll discuss what the barriers were.
Yeah.
We'll discuss the difference between the things you can control and things you can't. Mm-hmm. And the things you can control, like, I see that you're doing them. I go, that's good mental health.
Yeah.
Do you know? And so I think that that's been one of the inroads that we've wanted to make.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I think something that you mentioned earlier, Candace, was the fact that, you know, you have to recognize your own biases, you know, as mm-hmm. you, before you get into that home, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's something that you need to establish in order to get that rapport with your patients. So for, you know, our listeners, our nurses that are out there listening, how can they get more information about this program if they're interested in becoming nurses and working with the program?
Yeah, we're recruiting right now in Mobile and Baldwin and Escambia and Conecuh County. So our program is set to expand really across the state over the next 5 years. So please reach out to me. My email is knightc@uab.edu if you are interested in becoming an NFP nurse.
Oh, real quick, Knight with a K.
Yes, sorry. Yeah. The medieval kind.
we'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah. but we also have a great website that's just been updated that's on the School of Nursing homepage. So I would love to link to that as
Absolutely.
Well. But it's got ways that you can refer clients, that you can give, and that mm-hmm. you can see some of the great work that our nurses are doing.
How does a client qualify for the program?
So in Jefferson County, again, they're typically going to be a first-time mom and have to enroll before the end of that 28th week. But also, they don't have to have Medicaid, but to be eligible for Medicaid by income status.
Okay.
And then the rest of the counties that we serve, same deal, that they don't have to be a first-time mom.
Okay.
And they don't have to enroll by 28 weeks.
Yeah. Got it. And to enroll, where would they even go?
So we get a lot of our referrals from the Medicaid Care Coordination
okay.
System, but we take them from anywhere. They can self-refer on that website.
Oh.
And then, but we take referrals from schools, from friends of people who are in the program,
mm-hmm.
just anywhere. If you're interested, we'd love to talk to you.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think you guys have done a great job on this discussion, which is what it was, a discussion. What's next for the NFP program at UAB in terms of expansion? I know you
yeah.
talked about, you know, looking for nurses and Mobile.
Yeah.
And you just got a big grant.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the grant is the next big thing. We are actually expanding across the state over the next 5 years into five different regions, starting with that Gulf Coast, then that south east part of the state, and then kind of back up through the Black Belt region, then back up here closer to central Alabama, Cullman/Blount, and then out to the eastern part of the state. The other thing that we're doing with that is we're also bringing in certified nurse midwives into the model. So we are doing kind of an NFP plus. Mm-hmm. So that includes behavioral health, that includes nurse midwifery, particularly because in those rural parts of the state, we find that, you know, women really have so far to drive to access obstetrical care. We're going to be arming our nurses with the tools that they might need to do a true prenatal visit as they do telehealth with a nurse midwife or some other obstetrical provider. Mm-hmm. So they'll have Dopplers, they'll be able to do heart tones, you know, the urine dipsticks and the blood pressure cuffs and scales and those kinds of things. And so we're hoping to make sure that those women who don't have transportation, can't get to where they need to do a visit, that they can still receive care.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think the other thing that we get to do, too, is because we're through the child's second birthday, a lot of access to providers or funding sometimes stops at, 6 months to a year. Mm-hmm. What happens for that year afterwards? Yeah. Do you know that we, again, for mental health things, we think that, oh, if it doesn't happen within the first 6 weeks, you're fine. Uh-huh. And I'm like, oh, no. Like, so, you know, the dearth of mental health providers throughout Alabama is one thing that we are able to answer because there is a wait list. Mm-hmm. Even if you have the funding to get in with an outpatient provider, that can take months and months. And so that's another resource I think that we're really excited to bring, not just sort of the immediate time after pregnancy, access to, you know, psychopharmacological interventions, but being able to do all kinds, therapeutic interventions through, you know, for a full 2.5 years.
Yeah.
It's huge.
It's amazing. Y'all are changing the world. Honestly, I was really struck by what you said early on about the development of these children that have were born in this, you know, to these mothers that have gone through this program, but not just after 2 years old, but how successful they are later in life. And so you really are.
Well, and we come up, we have these annual picnics. And
oh, how fun.
We have people. We had a client who flew in from Colorado. They had moved out there and flew back for the picnic.
I want to come to the picnic.
Yeah, it was great.
But I want to come.
So, but we've got now, 5-year-olds?
Yeah.
And
kindergartners.
Kindergartners who, do you know, maybe they would have always been hyperverbal and inquisitive. But we get some, I mean, just really funny, great, bright kids. And, you know, are we a part of that? Or, you know, I always think too, is it this a mom who is willing to use a resource?
Well, absolutely.
Do you know? And she was, you know, so I'm like, chicken or the egg, which one came first? Yeah. And mine is, doesn't matter. If
doesn't
we
matter.
Have.
It's team.
That's right.
It's a team.
Bright,
I love
engaged
that.
Toddlers that will become bright, engaged school age children and adults. That is the best
that's
thing for the state of Alabama.
Well, Tracy, I think these guys did more talking than we did. And that's
I'm glad. That's how we like it.
That's how we like it.
No one wants to hear us talk.
No. Well, Karmi and Candace, thank you very much for joining us today. And to our listeners, we hope today's discussion was impactful and empowering as well. And we hope that you join us again at the next Clinical Pearls episode.